everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's July 2021, and you're listening to episode 244, which is a conversation about the Chinese religious movement Falun Gong. On this episode, I'm joined by Lindsay Medenwald, who is Executive Director of Mama Bear Apologetics, and she serves as a consulting editor for the Christian Research Journal. Lindsay has a master's in apologetics and ethics from Denver Seminary, a JD from St. Mary's School of Law, and a master's in public administration from Midwestern State University. Lindsay has written an in-depth feature article for the print edition of the Volume 44, Number 2 issue of the Christian Research Journal, and her article is called Falun Gong, How the West Was Won. And you can read her article when you subscribe to the journal at our website, equip.org. Lindsay, it's good to have you on.
Ah, it's so good to be back.
Well, longtime readers of the Christian Research Journal will know that back in way back, more than 20 years ago, in fact, 22 years ago, the Christian Research Institute published a major feature article on Falun Gong, and it was new at the time. It was founded in 1992. It's also known as Falun Dafa. And so this is kind of a long overdue follow-up where we've had Lindsay do some really extensive research onto where the movement is some 22 years later from our first article. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about Falun Gong and who founded it and where we are, like what's happened in the last 22 years? What's going on with the movement now?
Yeah, I would say a lot has happened and also not very much, if I'm being honest. In 1999, when that article was published, I was in high school and wholly unaware of Falun Gong, but it had been around for about 7 years at that point and had been in development for decades because its founder, Li Hongzhi, had come up with an offshoot of Qigong, which is a sort of practice that happens pretty often in China that was really popular in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And what it is it combines movements of your body to enhance your physical and mental capacities. It just makes you a stronger human overall. I want to get a couple of definitions out of the way right now so that we don't have to worry about them later. But Falun Gong, Falun means law wheel in Chinese, and Gong means exercise. And Falun Dafa, which is also considered Falun Gong, is called the teaching of great law. And essentially what they're doing is there are five specific movements in Falun Gong that are supposed to create this movement in a person's abdomen that brings them closer to the energies of the cosmos, I guess, is what Li Hongzhi has said in the past. And so I would say that that is still what Falun Gong is. The basic core tenets haven't shifted for the Falun Gong. What people might recognize more frequently now is that they are in the news more often and not so obscure as they were back in 1999. So that's really the focus of the article that I wrote for CRJ, was where have they come? And a lot of it is simply making themselves more present in the West.
Tell us a little bit more about Li Hongzhi. How did he come up with this idea of Falun Gong? I don't think in our last article we zeroed in particularly in depth on his particular teachings or writings as much. So kind of tell us a little bit more of, you know, what made him start this movement and these beliefs.
Master Li is a prolific writer, I guess I would call him. He writes a lot and has written a lot on what are the specific guidelines that one should follow when following Falun Gong. Li is pretty normal, I guess, if one were to look at his life. Nothing really stands out as outstanding in Li's life. He was born in China in either 1952 or 1951. So I want to clarify to the listeners that it can be really difficult to figure out exactly all the details of Li's life, because there is varying information available from different sources. The sources that are friendly to Li will describe his birth date as May 13th, 1951. And some of the sources that are not so friendly will say that he was born in July 1952. To clarify why that is, he actually changed his birth date in 1994 because he said that there was a clerical error on his birth certificate. And so he changed it to May 13th, 1951. What's interesting about that, though, Melanie, is that that is the birth date of the Buddha. And so some of the scholars have said that that is not just a coincidence that he picked May 13th to be his birth date, but because Li loves Buddha and regards him so highly, would have selected that birth date. And I do want to say that sometimes Buddha's birthday is celebrated on different dates, but that is one of the dates in China that Buddha's birthday is celebrated. As far as education goes, not really anything big in his educational history. It looks like he might have quit formal education in middle school. So he didn't really get a lot of higher education. Li was a band member. He plays the trumpet and apparently was pretty good. And he was an office worker. He worked on a farm. But it really was a really low level life, so to speak, for him in the beginning. He got interested in Qigong in his 20s and started to practice Qigong. And he did that quite frequently and became very heavily involved. One of the things you need to know about Qigong is that there were people who we call masters of Qigong who came up with their own varieties of the practice. This practice is okay in China. It is considered to be something that makes you healthier. So the Chinese government has historically been okay with Qigong. And we know that, you know, religions aren't always considered acceptable in China, but Qigong has been okay. When Li was 41, he introduced Falun Gong as his own version of Qigong, and it was fine and it was okay until he started saying that it was related to Buddhism. And that sent up some red flags, as it would, especially in a country where religion is not allowed frequently. I think our listeners need to know that, and maybe they do know, that there are five official religions, only five recognized in China. And Buddhism is one of them. There's Taoism and Islam, Protestantism and Catholicism. But when Qigong masters started creating their own variants, and Li in particular started making it look like a religion in the way that he was called the leader and his writings, the Chinese government thought it became a threat and it was more spiritual than health related. So Li actually left China and moved to the United States in 1996. And in 1999, which is the year that this original article was written for the CRJ, Falun Gong was banned from China. The Chinese government calls it a dangerous cult and has imprisoned Falun Gong adherents. And so Li is still teaching, but he is in the United States now.
I did not realize that they have built an entire compound in New York State until I was watching in preparation for this interview last year, 2020, ABC News, kind of like the PBS of Australia, did a 30-minute piece on Falun Gong. And I didn't realize that they have done quite extensive buildings and teaching centers and temples, Chinese-looking temples, in just kind of more of a rural New York City.
Yeah, it's hundreds of acres exist in New York, about 2 hours north of New York City, and it's very secret. I think in the same video that you watched, it shows a couple of residents from that area trying to get a peek inside the compound. And it's, you know, it's got bushes and trees and whatnot blocking much of the compound. But there are beautiful buildings on site. There is a school or two on that compound, and they also house a dance troupe there. But what they claim that this compound is, what the Falun Gong claim why it exists, is a refuge for Falun Gong refugees who are fleeing China. So this is sort of a safe place where they can reside and not be part of torture or imprisonment in China. I don't know much about that compound, obviously, because I haven't been there. They do say that Li lives on the compound, but again, there's mixed information about Li and his whereabouts and where he is at any given time. There are rumors that he's in Europe sometimes and then he's back in the US. So it's really unclear what Li is doing at any given moment. But there are other leaders there who take care of the compound and lead these refugees in Falun Gong practices.
You're listening to episode 244 of the Postmodern Realities podcast with guest Lindsay Medenwalt, who has written a feature article for the new print edition of the Christian Research Journal, which is volume 44, number 2. Her article is called Falun Gong, How the West Was Won, and you can read it when you subscribe to the journal at equip.org. Now, I don't know if you missed my announcement last week, and that is we are having a contest to see if we can get all of our ratings up on Apple Podcasts to 100 by the end of this year, by the end of December 2021. So far, we have 61 ratings, and it can be a written review and it can be a starred review. So the last written review we had was back a couple weeks ago in June. So I would like to suggest that you enter this contest. Now, the only people who can be eligible for this free subscription, and you can, if you already have a subscription, you can gift your free subscription to someone else or your pastor. And that would be people who give a written review after July 1st, 2021. So if you go on there and write even just one short sentence, you will be entered in. And even though you don't use your real name, I will randomize all of the people who have written a short review in the next 6 months, and I will tell you who the winner is and then give an email address where that winner needs to email us so that we can get all of your details and get you that free subscription to the print edition of the journal. So we would really appreciate it if you could give us a review on Apple Podcasts. In addition, if you want to partner with us by just simply telling a friend or telling a lot of friends, if you post this episode on your social media accounts, we'd really be grateful. And of course, we're always grateful for any tips you can give us. You can give us those at equip.org, go to magazine, drop down to Postmodern Realities Podcast. At any of the landing pages for any episode, you'll see a link there, and your gift can be as small as $3. That would really help us out to continue bringing you this podcast. So thank you, and definitely enter in the contest, because you can't win if you don't enter. Well, we were just talking about Falun Gong founder and headmaster Li, and that now his primary residence is in the United States, and they have this big compound in New York. But if he's here in the United States and there are followers in the United States, does Falun Gong still exist in China? And I wonder about that, because in watching the video that I was mentioning by the Australian Public Broadcasting Service, is that particular correspondent was one of the few Western correspondents that they allowed into a kind of a re-education center for Falun Gong, where they were literally teaching the people that were being re-educated that Falun Gong is a cult. And then they showed the various practitioners, it looked like women, all women in this video, go down and say, yes, Falun Gong is a cult and so forth. And they were allowed to film them. The Chinese government allowed to film them. So with that crackdown, which I think we mentioned in our 1999 article by the Chinese government, is it still around there?
Yes, but I can't tell you how many are there, because there are conflicting numbers. It could be anywhere from 7 million to 70 million, which is a pretty big range of numbers. I would say that there's probably somewhere in the middle. that number of practitioners in China. They are not going to be revealing themselves very frequently because there is this tenuous relationship between the Chinese government and Falun Gong, and it is, of course, banned in China. So a lot of what they do is underground and not telling people who they are, but they are still practicing their movements and they're still following Master Li and listening to what he teaches. He is consistently posting things on the Falun Gong website and making sure that his teachings are known. He's written many books and they follow his teachings, even though he's in the United States. He encourages them to protest the treatment of Falun Gong in China, of course, from the United States. So he won't be suffering the consequences of that behavior. But yes, they are still ever present in China. And of course, the Chinese government is trying to crack down on them because in its mind, it is a dangerous cult and they don't want their people to be involved in something that is harmful either to themselves or to the government. But it is interesting to see that it still exists and it's making its presence in the West, but it's also still in China, I guess, similar to other religions that have been banned, if that makes sense.
I want to talk a little bit more specifically about their beliefs that you just touched on. What are some of their core beliefs and do they align with any other religion's beliefs? As I watched that video, some of their beliefs sounds like it's a mix of various different things.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment, Melanie. I think that if you're looking at Falun Gong on its face, it seems very Buddhist, and you would sprinkle in some New Age, which is also very Buddhist. New Age is sort of a compilation of a lot of Eastern religions. And so I would say that, and some scholars that I've read, I think would agree with me in saying that it does have a Buddhist feel to it. And like I mentioned before, Li has a high regard for Buddha, but he has a high regard for Jesus. So I would say that this doesn't bear any resemblance to Christianity, though. It is definitely more Buddhist in the way that they think about the universe and the afterlife, particularly in their beliefs of reincarnation and karma, and how you're constantly on the reincarnation cycle, trying to free yourself of what Li calls attachments. And once you've freed yourself of these attachments, then you're off the reincarnation wheel and you've hit enlightenment. They don't call it enlightenment, they call it consummation. But if you look at it from afar, it definitely looks like Buddhist enlightenment. I would say that Li has really worked hard in the last several years to remove the religion label from Falun Gong. But some of the scholars that I've read and listened to have said, well, that seems a bit of a stretch to say it's not a religion if you're looking at the definition of religion. So if it's metaphysical beliefs or a belief in a god or an afterlife, then Falun Gong falls into a religious category. And it definitely looks and feels and sounds like a religion. They are following a particular leader's writings and instructions and trying to live according to these particular principles. And so it depends on what definition you're looking at, but it really seems like it's more than just a simple health practice. It's definitely a worldview, and it does lean toward the feeling of religion. As far as their other beliefs, they've got quite a few, but the three main words that they tend to fall onto are truthfulness, compassion, and forbearance. These are kind of the moral principles that Li has said the universe abides by, not just humanity, but all the parts of matter. And so it's not just humanity that is following these core tenets. It is everything in the entire universe. And when I'm talking about the movements, that's the other key part of Falun Gong. That's really what sets it apart from other worldviews, is that Li has taught that these specific movements are what leads his followers to consummation. it looks a lot like Tai Chi. So I think when people are thinking religious movements or people who do movements, they're picturing, you know, Central Park in New York City, and they've got groups of people practicing slow movements. And that is considered usually Tai Chi. At least that's what I always thought it was. But it seems to be that a lot of those people are actually Falun Gong practitioners. And I had no idea that that was happening. I mean, I remember going to New York City as a young person and seeing people doing movements in Central Park. And it's not just in New York City, it's in lots of parks across the country and across the world. But I always thought it was Tai Chi, and that's not accurate. There are other worldviews that practice these movements, Falun Gong being one of them. And those specific movements lead them to enlightenment and freedom from the strongholds of this world, I guess, is what I would say. Finally, with the New Age, Lee is very particular about talking about something called the celestial eye. And anyone who has studied the New Age movement has read extensively about this topic. And as one in Falun Gong cultivates the practice of Falun Gong, they will develop their celestial eye or third eye. What does this do for them? Well, it can do a number of things for them, but essentially what it does is it allows them to see past this basic human plane that we're on and allows them to see beyond time and space. So they can see all the other things that regular humans can't see. And I've seen images of what this might look like, and it apparently looks different for every different practitioner, but it's bright colors, and you can start to get a sense of people by looking at their colors, and it's very New Agey. That's the best way to put it. It's very New Agey. So anybody who studied the New Age can kind of recognize, oh, the celestial eye. We've all seen images of the third eye on a forehead. That is really Falun Gong-like as well.
Well, what's interesting is you're mentioning these New Age beliefs that come out of Eastern religions that, you know, they've taken pieces and parts of. But I was also interested to find out that they believe in aliens as well. Where are they getting some of their beliefs on aliens, especially as it relates to, for example, interracial marriage?
Yeah, Lee has come up with some interesting ideas about aliens. And he definitely believes in aliens. He's written extensively about aliens. He says that humanity is fooling itself if we don't think aliens exist. He believes that aliens are negative beings and that the aliens are trying to destroy humanity and really trying to harm us. And one way that they are trying to harm us is by encouraging interracial relationships and marriages. Apparently, Lee is very against mixed races, and he has said it multiple times that he thinks that that is destroying the essence of humanity by removing the roots, is kind of what he's called it. And once those roots are removed, we can no longer make it to paradise, because Lee calls people mixed race mongrels. I mean, he really has a disdain for interracial relationships and kids who are mixed race. And he says that these aliens are just taking over because we continue to mix the bloodlines and we don't have any solid roots to hold firm to, and that eventually the aliens will take over forever.
So you mentioned that he has high regard for Jesus, probably not Jesus of the Bible, but more like maybe a New Age version of Jesus. But does Falun Gong believe in God or some kind of salvation that can be attained?
Yes, they believe in many gods. And I wouldn't say that it's like Hinduism with all of their gods, but they do believe in many gods. And some of the writings that I read from Lee explain gods in different ways. They're different sizes physically. So you have tiny little, I mean, I think of like Ant-Man version gods, and then you have like Hulk size gods. And it's interesting because he says that they all have their own purposes, but that these gods govern everything from the weather to reincarnation and whether humans can get off the reincarnation wheel. They created humanity. So there is a creation narrative, so to speak, in Falun Gong, and that we were actually humans were created on this higher plane. And there is also a story of the fall in Falun Gong. Again, don't confuse this with the biblical narrative of creation and the fall, but he said that humanity fell prey to moral depravity. And because of that, the gods sent us to the lowest physical planes to live. So that would be Earth. Earth is the lowest physical plane, but we apparently can't get our acts straight. And so humans keep failing. And Lee has taught that actually humanity has been annihilated at least 81 times, completely annihilated and wiped out, aside from just a few humans who were left to repopulate and regrow the earth, which is just a fascinating thought in and of itself. And it reminds me a little of, we talked about David Wilcock several months ago and his views of aliens and how aliens have removed people to different planets and things like that. Lee also agrees with that, that there has been some interplanetary movement to save humanity by the gods. The problem is that, again, Lee thinks aliens are bad and that the gods have been trying to save us from the aliens. But because we are so morally depraved, the gods have sort of given up and have let the aliens come and play, so to speak. So then another way that he sort of aligned the biblical narrative is that he does believe the story of the flood from the Bible, which I thought was fascinating. He discusses it in his writings and says that that is the last time that humanity was completely annihilated, was the flood narrative, and that Noah, you know, was left to repopulate the earth with his family. And so if we can think of the flood narrative happening 81 times, that's what Lee believes. They do believe Jesus was a real person. They do not believe that he is our savior, I guess is the way to put it. They don't believe that any God is our savior. I would say that salvation falls in your own hands if you are a Falun Gong practitioner. I want to add a caveat to that because Lee has said that he can help lead his followers through this cultivation process and reaching consummation ultimately, but even he can't make them completely saved. It is the actions of the people themselves, the followers themselves, that leads them to cultivation and consummation. And ultimately, they can become gods themselves, which is really fascinating. So Jesus is held highly in regard for Falun Gong, but he is not their savior. So when you're having a conversation with somebody from Falun Gong or any worldview, really, and they mention Jesus, we always need to ask questions like, well, who is Jesus to you? Because we can't assume that Jesus is the same for them as he is for us as Christians.
You know, it was interesting in that video that I watched, they actually were able to interview the founders, Master Lee's son, Jonathan, mm-hmm. and he did briefly mention reincarnation. So do they hold to, you said they believe in many gods, but not in the same Hindu sense of all these millions of gods. But do they hold the same Hindu belief of karma and reincarnation in the same way? And if they can ultimately become gods, how would they get off the reincarnation cycle finally to be a god?
Yeah, that's a good question. And this is kind of where the blending of worldviews happens. And you can see this a lot in offshoot religions like Falun Gong, where they're pulling different worldviews from different areas. And it's very evident in New Age, but I think it's extremely evident in Falun Gong. They believe that they can get off the reincarnation cycle through cultivation. Cultivation, remember, is those specific five movements that they do, and they practice these regularly every day, multiple times a day. And that allows them to get off the cycle. Now, karma is what holds them back. One of the differences I would say between our thoughts of karma versus the Falun Gong thoughts of karma, they will admit that there is a white karma and a black karma. These are good karma, bad karma. But Falun Gong really seems to emphasize the bad over the good. It is constantly talking about bad action. And it's not just the bad actions of this lifetime, Melanie. It's the bad actions of all of your lifetimes. And who knows how many lifetimes you've had, whether that's as a human or as a bug. And I'm not saying that to be funny. I'm saying you're building up your karma, whether you're a bug or you're a human. And when you're human, that is your opportunity to get off the cycle. But you may only get that opportunity every several thousand years. So you really need to take advantage of the opportunity when you're human and try to get off the cycle now. What can they do that? Well, they can do those movements. As they participate in those movements, that pushes the black karma out and draws the white karma in. They can also suffer. Suffering gets a pretty big part in Falun Gong. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but essentially the more that they suffer, the more good karma they pull in and bad karma they push out. One thing that I think Westerners in particular think about when they're thinking about karma is they're thinking if you help other people, you are doing good service. And so you're drawing, you know, good karma on yourself. What Lee teaches is that you actually need to be really careful when you're helping others, because you could actually be drawing bad karma onto them by not allowing them to suffer through whatever incidents that they are experiencing. So although he encourages you to be helpful, he does not encourage you to go out of your way to take the load off of somebody if they are suffering, because he says that they're dealing with their own karma. And if they're not allowed to suffer, they can't cleanse the bad karma, which I thought was really interesting to read about. And finally, consummation. Really, that's the ultimate enlightenment that Falun Gong can reach. The main way to do that, besides just practicing those movements and getting rid of karma, is getting rid of all of their attachments. Lee speaks heavily about attachment. He says that wealth is an attachment, fame can be an attachment. You could be attached to your family. You could be attached to your job. You could be attached to Lee himself. You could be so obsessed with Lee that you're unable to get rid of him in your mind. And that's an attachment and becomes unhealthy and actually prevents you from reaching enlightenment. And so he is really keen on telling people and his followers, get rid of all of your attachments, whatever they may be. Once you've gotten rid of your attachments, you have cleansed your mind and you can achieve godlike status yourself. And so he claims that he has achieved, of course, this status. He doesn't come out fully and call himself a god, but he has said that the Buddha and Jesus are now his disciples, which I thought was a really interesting turn of events in the narrative of the Falun Gong. And so he does really tell his followers that once they've released these attachments and adhered to Falun Gong principles, they can become gods too.
I'd be interested to know what other kinds of beliefs that they espouse and that Li Hongxue teaches, because besides the human attachments preventing salvation, it seems to me that like some other groups, for example, Jehovah's Witnesses, they reject traditional medication and they just think, like you mentioned, that if you do more movements or exercise, if you feel sick, that you will be healed. Although when this news outlet was interviewing Lee's son, he did say, we don't prevent people from taking medication or going to the hospital. He said, now, if I broke my leg, maybe I would go to the hospital, but I haven't had any sicknesses or colds in 10 years. Not unsimilar to, you know, the word of faith movement within Christianity, where they'll say, you know, if you really have faith in God, you will not have any disease or illness. So is that a big part of their practice? And are there other practices besides that seems like a rejection of, you know, taking any kind of medication?
Yeah, this was really the biggest thing that I read about besides some of the other, you know, treatment in China bits. The medicine is controversial because on the one hand, like you said, Falun Gong will say, oh no, we totally allow them to get treatment. And I thought it was actually interesting that he said it'd been 10 years since he'd gotten sick, because presumably he's been Falun Gong his whole life, which means that he's gotten treatment before that. I don't want to do a deep dive into that, but I did think it was interesting that he'd only claimed to have been healthy for 10 years. And I'm looking at other friends and family, and a lot of us have been healthy for 10 years. So that's not all that unusual. And we don't practice Falun Gong. All that to say, outwardly, Lee will say, oh no, it's totally fine if ordinary people get medical treatment. It's really important that we camp on the word ordinary. Lee does not believe that his followers are ordinary. He is very explicit in the way that he refers to them as cultivators, and he differentiates between Falun Gong practitioners and ordinary people. For him, ordinary people, go ahead and go get your medical treatment. That's completely fine. Falun Gong can get medical treatment, but what they're not saying in that interview that we watched or some of the other interviews that I've seen is that if a Falun Gong follower gets medical treatment, that restarts their cycle and they have to start over again. Lee has frequently referred to medicine as poisonous pills, and he will say that if a cultivator takes this medicine, these poisonous pills, he's now ordinary. And you can't achieve consummation if you're ordinary. And so they're going to have to come back to it eventually. And like you, I've read and listened to stories where people have really gone off their meds because they believe that these movements and their practices are healing them. And then they die. And we can't say that they die because they didn't get medical treatment or that they died because of any particular reason. And these are, of course, anecdotal instances and examples of people going off their meds because they think that that's what they're supposed to do. But if you read between the lines of what Lee has written, it does seem pretty clear that his followers are not supposed to take medicine. And that if they do take medicine, it's almost a lack of faith in their beliefs. And they don't really believe that Falun Gong is the path to freedom and that they have to rely on this poisonous stuff to enter their body, to cleanse them. And so I thought that was a really key part of learning about Falun Gong was their view of medication. Of course, they can get religious exemptions just like others in the United States, and they do. Many of them are probably not vaccinated, and that's, you know, another thing. But the medicine is one thing. Another thing that is not really unique to Falun Gong, Melanie, but because you'll hear what I say and you'll be like, well, Christians believe a lot of this stuff too. And that's true. Lee has a very high regard for morality. And he has written about morality extensively. If his followers are not moral, that is another thing that holds them back. Because, I mean, karma, right? And so he's listed many things similar to the Jehovah's Witnesses. Interesting that you brought them up, because the Jehovah's Witnesses also have a list of things that you're not supposed to do. If you do a deep dive on their website and some of their writings, you see that. Same with Falun Gong. Falun Gong has a list of things that you shouldn't do. Some of those things that Lee has said publicly are feminism. If you're a feminist, you are morally depraved. Drug use, listening to rock music, that's forbidden. Drinking alcohol, promiscuity of any type, and homosexuality. He's spoken out very firmly against homosexuality and says that all of these things lead to attachment. Ultimately, we are attached to these morally depraved things. And that, of course, prevents us from becoming gods because we're morally depraved. And we're just playing into the hands of the aliens who are playing games with us, is what he says. Finally, why do we even want to reach enlightenment? This is one of their views, is that we can attain supernatural powers. Supernatural powers are a big deal to Lee. He has been really careful about not saying which supernatural powers he himself has, but he has described some of the supernatural powers of other followers who have reached consummation. And those include being able to levitate and lift themselves off the ground, being able to see through walls, being able to heal themselves and others, and the ability to prevent bad things from happening. One of the things that I read, they described a scenario where I think a bus was going to run into somebody, And a Falun Gong practitioner saw that happen beforehand and was able to rescue the person who was going to be hit by the bus. But again, you've got to argue like, okay, wait, did you prevent that person from suffering? And now they're not able to cleanse their bad karma. So there's always this tug and pull with practitioners of whether they should help people if they see these things happening or heal people if they've got that power. But he is very careful in telling people what his supernatural powers are, because I think, and this is just my personal opinion, that he is trying to prevent people from calling him out. Like, well, show us that you can levitate, or show us that you can heal this person. Everything that he does is behind closed doors. So if he claims that he has exorcised demons, for example, that happens behind closed doors. And only that person and maybe a family member will see that happen. And we just go off of their claims then that they've been healed or that their demons have been exorcised.
At the beginning of this episode, we talked a little bit, just touched on the Chinese government treatment of Falun Gong. And I'm interested in that because Falun Gong talks about them being persecuted by the Chinese government. And yet it seems to me that Falun Gong is very active in proactively being very against the Chinese government. And maybe that's what people think of in media coverage, you know, that they hear that, you know, Falun Gong has been targeted by the Chinese government. And that's interesting because a lot of religious groups, that's not one of their main tenets to go after the Chinese government, right? At least the ones that practice, for example, Christians that practice in China. And yet it seems to be a big part of some of the focus of the Falun Gong movement itself. Is there any truth to that?
That is a very tough question, because we need to be careful here, because sometimes it's hard to tell what truth is when it comes to Falun Gong and what truth is when it, you know, comes to China. It's a he said, she said scenario in a lot of ways. I will say that most scholars will agree with this, that there has been imprisonment and torture and organ harvesting that has been targeted directly toward Falun Gong practitioners in China. I read a report that was published in 2020 by an independent group that investigated these claims. This was not a Falun Gong organization that did this investigation. And they said that there has indeed been some element of all of those things happening to Falun Gong practitioners since the early 2000s. Now, the Chinese government has come out and said that they have not harvested any organs from prisoners, I think prisoners in general, not just Falun Gong prisoners, since 2015. So I want to be careful in how we say this happened or this didn't happen. It does seem very clear that there is some element of persecution against Falun Gong in China. But Falun Gong also is consistently speaking out against the Chinese government, which you said, and I agree, sets itself apart from many of the religions that are present in China. One of the scholars that I read, she's written books and she was, you know, on some films that I watched about the persecution of the Falun Gong, is that she calls it a cold genocide. And I had no idea what that meant before working on this piece. A cold genocide is sort of when it's normalized and it's slow going and it's subtle and it's multidimensional. And essentially what it is abuse and persecution toward a particular group. And it can be maybe they run advertising against a group. And so whoever's watching the advertising will say, oh yeah, that sounds bad. Or maybe it's just, we're going to imprison 1,000 people and we're going to keep them imprisoned. And that becomes normal. It becomes normal for us to report on a particular group. Oh, I know this person lives here. You should arrest them because I think they're a member of whatever group is being persecuted at the time. It is questionable whether or not that's happening in China, but it does look like many Falun Gong members have been imprisoned. And we've seen the prison camps. Like you mentioned earlier, there are prison camps or re-education camps where Falun Gong members are being told, hey, you were a member of a dangerous cult. We're going to re-educate you. We're going to cleanse you of all of the bad things that you've learned and that you've endured and whatnot. I don't know what happens when cameras aren't there. There have been other videos released by the Falun Gong organizations that have shown what looks to be abuse toward Falun Gong members. But again, it's hard to tell what's true. I think a good example of hard to tell what's true is something big that happened in 2001. I want to be clear that Lee has spoken out very solidly against suicide amongst followers. He does not think that his members should commit suicide or kill themselves. He believes that that is like the ultimate harm that you can do, and that takes you away from consummation. But on the other hand, he's talked about enduring intense persecution and suffering and how that leads you to ultimate life in paradise. In 2001, there were five people who ended up being Falun Gong practitioners, two men, two women, and a 12-year-old child who set themselves on fire in Tiananmen Square. And there's video, and it's really disturbing to watch, of them doing this. Two of them died, including the 12-year-old. Falun Gong immediately separated themselves from the event and said, we did not tell them to do that. Obviously, we do not agree with suicide. That is not something we would have told them to do. And then the Chinese government said, we didn't tell them to do that either. We're not trying to stage some event that makes Falun Gong look bad. And outside scholars have looked at that event and said, yeah, it looks like neither the Chinese government nor Falun Gong were responsible for that. They were practitioners acting on their own accord. So I agree with that scholar. I think that he's right. So I would say that we really just need to be careful when we're looking at news stories from whatever outlet it comes from, whether that comes from the Chinese government or if it comes from Falun Gong, and say, okay, some of this is probably true and some of this is probably not true. And we need to take some things seriously and say, yes, persecution has happened, but to what extent? And recognize that this has been a battle that has been going on between Falun Gong and the Chinese government since the mid-90s. So this is not a new battle. Westerners are recently hearing about it, but it's not new. And I don't know that it's going to be going away anytime soon.
So I think some of the listeners into this part of the episode were towards the end of it are probably thinking, well, this sounds very interesting, but it really doesn't impact my daily life. I'm never going to come across Falun Gong. They're just some, you know, minor religious group that's relocated from China to the United States. But what I was very surprised to learn from your article is that they have used various different means to kind of be able to bring people into Falun Gong or let people know about their movement. And one of them I was really super surprised to hear about, because I've always just thought it was a dance group that comes to my city all the time. And in fact, a few years ago when we were hosting a Chinese student who lived with us for a few years, I thought, oh, he might like to see this. He wasn't interested in dance, so we didn't go see it. But I had no idea it was related in any way to Falun Gong. So what are the ways in which Falun Gong is, you know, making its presence known in the West and specifically in the United States, where some people would be like, I had no idea because I interact with things that they produce all the time. So this is of interest to probably a majority of our listeners.
This was one of the most fascinating parts of my research when I was researching for this article, Melanie, because when I would mention Falun Gong to someone, they would say, I have no idea who that is. Or what they would tell me about is the organ harvesting that we just talked about. But then if I would mention the Epic Times, they would go, oh yeah, I read that newspaper. And I'm like, oh, did you know that that was founded by Falun Gong? And jaws would drop, like, no, I had no idea. And it's astonishing to me that people don't know this. It's not that shocking, I guess, when you're looking at it. But now when I know, I'm like, oh, well, it's obvious. And this is where it's different from the 99 article. And this is kind of where the big update happened, is how Falun Gong is making its way to the West. And they're doing it through media. They have created the Epoch or Epic Times. I'm going to call it Epic. It is referred to both on their website. Both pronunciations are mentioned on its website in their various videos. So I'm going with Epic. That was founded by Falun Gong in 2000. And it was in print. And originally, they targeted Chinese Americans to give them news about China, an accessible news source for them. And now it's primarily an online following, but it's not just Chinese Americans who are following them. Because let me give you some statistics. I checked the numbers last night, and right now Epoch Times has almost 416,000 Twitter followers, 8.5 million Facebook followers, and more than 500,000 YouTube subscribers, which we know anybody who does this kind of work in the media knows that those numbers are big. There is a large following of the Epoch Times. They also just launched their new Epoch TV station. They already had a channel called New Tang Dynasty, which is a 24-hour station that provides stuff for Chinese Americans in particular. The Epoch Times, Melanie, has claimed that it is not political and that it has no political agenda. But if you read it, you do see some anti-communism and anti-Chinese government pieces. And if you do a little bit more digging, like scroll all the way down to the bottom of their website, you will see pro Falun Gong information on their websites. And then the Shen Yun dance troupe. I think that one catches everyone off guard. And I do wonder what would have happened had you taken your foreign exchange student to this particular show, because it's colorful and it's bright and these performers are super talented dancers. And I have not attended any of their performances. I have considered it, but have never gone. But what they claim to do is to promote their ancient Chinese culture, traditional Chinese culture. But the Chinese government has actually come out against Shen Yun and said that it's all anti-China propaganda. Having not attended one of these in particular, I would say I'm going to stay neutral on that. But there is some discussion about what the whole purpose of Shen Yun is. Knowing that it was created by Falun Gong, I would not be shocked to know that there is anti-communism or anti-Chinese government information within the show.
So you don't think that their particular news feed from Epoch Times is biased in any way towards Falun Gong's teachings? I mean, you have just said that we should really think, you know, can some of the things that they say be trusted, not trusted? And in fact, in the particular short documentary that I watched, one of the, I guess, former employees or an employee who's no longer practicing Falun Gong said, well, they don't really come out in the Epoch Times and say who they are, but it sounds like they are a little bit more forthcoming than has been portrayed.
Yeah, I agree with that person. I think the more that you look at Epoch Times, the more that you see that it is biased, regardless of its point to itself that says we're unbiased and we're the most reliable news source. But how many media outlets say that? You know, it's tough. I'm a former journalist and I try to look for balance wherever I go for my news. And we've seen this really blow up, you know, in 2020, 2016. The culture seems to be divided by media. I mean, if you're watching one particular station and somebody knows about that, you're labeled a particular way just by the news station that you watch. I would say that there's definitely been some controversy when it comes to Epoch Times. In 2016, they definitely threw their support to Donald Trump. It's not that unusual for a news organization to throw their support one way or the other, but Epoch Times was also banned from buying advertising on Facebook because they had apparently spread misinformation before the election. How did they do that? Well, it seems like they created fake accounts of people who were supporting Donald Trump. It seems like they created advertising that was definitely skewed in a certain way and a lot of times not accurate. So they were definitely banned by Facebook, which, you know, they have the right to ban who they want. And it doesn't necessarily mean that Epoch Times was doing anything wrong. And of course, Epoch Times will claim, well, we're just doing our jobs and we didn't do anything wrong. Donald Trump has shared Epoch Times before he was banned from Twitter, had shared some stories from Epoch Times. And Donald Trump Jr. frequently shares from Epoch Times. The other bias that you might see coming from media sources created by Falun Gong have to do with conspiracy theories. I didn't do a deep dive into this in the article, But New Tang, which is one of their TV stations, says that it airs family-friendly programming, but it has also recently aired a series that spreads information related to QAnon, which is an organization that it's hard to define QAnon, but essentially it spreads conspiracy theories about the U.S. government primarily. With COVID-19, I touch on this briefly in the article, Epoch Times has labeled COVID-19 the Chinese Communist Party virus, has called it CCP virus continuously, and says that, you know, this was planned by the Chinese Communist Party. And they also have written disparaging information about the vaccine, which kind of makes sense if it is related to Falun Gong, because they would be anti-medicine. But all that to say, Melanie, there are claims about a lot of media outlets having bias and selective reporting. And, you know, one person might claim that a particular media outlet spreads misinformation, and that another person will say, no, that's the only place that I can find truth. And this is where Christians and all people really should practice discernment when we're taking in information from anybody. Knowing where the information comes from allows us to process things more even keel. And if we know that this is run by Falun Gong, we might not intake the information as truth as much as we would if we knew that it was an unbiased organization in real life. But I would say practice discernment if you're going to continue to read the Epoch Times. I'm not going to tell you to unsubscribe from the Epoch Times, but I would say maybe make sure that you're reading things with an eye toward truth. And if it seems fishy, do a little bit more research.
How should Christians respond when they meet someone who's a Falun Gong practitioner, or specifically, I guess, you know, like you were mentioning, go to one of the performances of their dance troupe, or, you know, read regularly the Epoch Times? I think, you know, when this podcast started, I bet most people thought, I'm never going to run into anybody who practices this. And yet it seems like with their various media outreaches that you probably will run into at some point, or know somebody else who would be particularly interested in some of their media platforms. So how should we handle that?
This is really the crux of the matter, isn't it? As an apologist, this is the most exciting question of all of the questions, because I think that it relates not just to Falun Gong, but adherence of any worldview in general. How should we respond to worldview and people who adhere to particular worldviews that are not Christian? And of course, you know, we can say with truth in love, and we can say with gentleness and respect. But I think it's a little bit more than that, Melanie, because we really do need to share truth. And I think Christians have gotten a little careful about sharing the gospel because we're afraid of stepping on people's toes. And we're afraid of saying, hey, that's not reliable, or that's not true. And we need to be bold in speaking truth. It's just the reality of our culture. If we keep saying, you know, oh, that's okay, it's your truth, but I have my truth. Well, no, we have the truth, and we should be shouting that from the rooftops, because why wouldn't we? I think it's so interesting to know that as Christians, we know that Jesus is our Savior, and yet we're so leery about sharing that with people because we're afraid of bringing offense. If we know that a brother or sister in Christ is believing something that is not true, we should tell them. We should call them out for that and let them know that they need to stick to Scripture. And if something doesn't align with Scripture, call it out for what it is. And if we see that we are following something that is unreliable, cut it out of your life. It's not that complicated. I just did a series at our church about discipleship and technology and talked to parents about their kids. And one of the questions was, well, what if we've already gone down this rabbit trail and we're letting them watch YouTube channels and this? I said, then you cut it out. It's okay to say, you know, we made a mistake in the past, but we're not going to make a mistake in the future. Using discernment is also something that's so important for Christians. If you meet a Falun Gong practitioner, which you could, especially if you live in the New York area, you should respond with gentleness and get to know them and become friends and let them know, like, I care for you as a human and I want to get to know you. And, oh, hey, why do you believe this? And what do you believe? Ask them good questions and then say, hey, can I tell you what I believe? And then that's your opportunity to share your faith with them. But I think one of the biggest thing for Christians is just not to be fearful of causing offense. Christianity is going to be offensive to some people, but that doesn't make it not true.
Well, finally, on a much lighter note, I have some fun rapid-fire questions for Lindsay. Lindsay, it's summer, so what's your favorite summer food?
Watermelon. I love watermelon.
And the pool, a lake, or the beach?
None of the above. Send me to the mountains.
And if you could take any vacation and money was no object, where would you go?
Europe. I've been dying to go.
Well, thanks, Lindsay, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thanks for having me, Melanie.
You've been listening to episode 244 of the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest was Lindsay Mettenwalt. She has written an in-depth feature article in the print edition of the Christian Research Journal, which is volume 44, number 2. Her article is called Falun Gong, How the West Was Won. You can read it when you subscribe to the journal at equip.org.
We'd like to connect to you, so please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man YouTube channel and join in the conversation in the comments section and in the live chat when we have premiere videos. Please follow the Bible Answer Man page on Facebook and on Twitter. You will find us at Hank Hanegraaff, Bible Answer Man, Christian Research Institute, and Christian Research Journal, as well as on Instagram at the Bible Answer Man account. You won't want to miss every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern when we live stream the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff at our website, equip.org. In addition, please subscribe to the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank gets out of the studio and into his study and engages in in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. You'll want to head on over to equip.org because there you're going to find thousands of free resources for you in articles and past broadcasts, our podcasts, and videos. And thank you for all the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute.